The business news of the nation, region, and the greater Des Moines Metro made possible through the support of Creamer Law Firm. Business law and estate planning, visit creamerlaw.com. And AARP of Iowa, real possibilities for our community and our citizens, no matter the age, aarp.org.
Welcome back to the Business News Hour. With us in studio is Sam Creamer from the Creamer Law Firm. We're going to be talking about buying or selling a business. Are you growing or are you going? Is your business growing or are you headed south or out, so to speak? Sam, welcome. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's always good to be here.
Happy March again, sir. This is good.
This is good. And with March comes spring and renewal. And with that, many people are starting to make plans for their business. And some people are planning to buy a business and some are planning to sell. So today what I'd like to talk about is either growing, i.e. buying a business, or going, selling your business and being ready for either retirement or some other new opportunity.
All right, let's go ahead and get started. I suspect that there are many steps to this.
There are. Buying or selling a business is much more of a marathon than a sprint.
Mm.
And to continue the sports metaphor, there are distinct steps that can or should be taken in this journey towards business ownership.
And that's if you're a buyer or a seller, right?
Buying and selling are almost two sides of one coin.
Okay.
But what I'd like to do is focus on the steps both from a buyer side and from a seller
side. All right. Let's go.
The first step, to paraphrase Plato, who said centuries ago, first know thyself.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with a self-assessment. And for the buyer, the key issue is commitment. Now, on other occasions, I have expressed and continue to express that commitment is the key, is indispensable element of success. Now, by indispensable element, I don't mean that you're going to succeed because you are committed. What I would suggest is it is likely you will fail if you are not committed. Commitment in this arena takes a couple of forms. One type of commitment is, of course, commitment of time. You are going to spend more of your waking hours in your business than you are at home, than you are at your hobbies.
That's right.
So you better be sure that this is something you want to do if you're going to buy a business. A second type of commitment, of course, is financial. Buying a business is no small matter. And buying a business is not like buying a steak at Fairway. It's a situation whereby it's an entity that's going to require more and less from different times and from different perspectives. A second thing that you need to really think about as a buyer is your risk tolerance.
Mm.
It turns out everybody assumes that when they buy the business is going to become Microsoft.
Instantly successful, and I'm going to retire.
General Motors. And it turns out that not all businesses react so quickly. Further, some do not react at all. One of the things we commonly tell our clients is not only should you be ready to put money in the business to buy it, but you will also probably need money for capital at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
But you should reserve at least, we feel, 6 months' worth of living expenses before you go and buy a business because it takes time for a business to generate money.
Now, if you already have a business, let me just go through this. Many startups, many individuals who are into the business scene have a side hustle. In other words, they have something going on that's going to see them through some of the tough times. Can that be successful for some people, maybe?
It's always a case-by-case consideration. Yeah. And by side hustle, I assume you're talking about something like they drive Uber or they have an insurance job while they're trying to float their software business. The answer is yes, it can be successful. But that gets back to the commitment issue. And the commitment that also is necessary is a commitment of time. And if the side hustle is detracting from the business itself, then I would say it's a real detriment, and you got to pick one or the other. Now, self-assessment from a seller's angle is a little bit different. The seller has to sort of decide, why is it that they are selling this business? I have never found that a seller sells a business because they feel they're making too much money. It turns out that seller motivation Can be that they want to do something else. Seller motivation can be burnout. Seller motivation can be wanting to cash the business out. But I think that the second issue in seller self-assessment is to try to decide what they think they're going to get from the business. Again, most sellers think they're going to get significantly more than the buyer's willing to pay, and expectations have to be managed. Further, in many cases, when you sell a business, you don't get it all in cash. You have to take back a seller note. Moving to the next step, from self-awareness to the second step, is readiness. For the buyer, the real issue is whether the buyer is fully knowledgeable in the industry and in the business itself. Does the buyer have knowledge of where the industry is going, and is it a good business for the buyer to be in? But additionally, the buyer has to know something about business itself. Now, it certainly is the case that in many transactions, the seller stays on and provides some training for the buyer. But the buyer has to also know how to run a business. Readiness includes having significant financial resources available. If you go to buy a business, you're buying something that is going to require outside capital, whether that outside capital is in the form of a bank loan, which is actually debt rather than equity. It's not exactly capital, but it is, in fact, funds that are necessary to acquire the business. But also, what happens when times get lean? Do you have sufficient resources for that? For the seller, readiness involves really a self-audit. And this is where attorneys and accountants can be extremely helpful. Sellers should look at things like whether their key contracts are, in fact, in writing.
Uh-huh.
Sellers should look at things like whether the leases are extendable. What contracts are assignable? The seller should look at things like, are the key employees actually tied into an employment contract and arguably a non-compete, so that your buyer doesn't buy a business only to find that the employees the buyer intended to have become their most important competitors.
Wow.
One of the things that some sellers like a lot is an appraisal. There are business appraisers out there, and they do a very good job. They are not inexpensive, but they provide some type of independent valuation for a business,
which is important,
which, again, deals with expectations.
Right.
As my grandfather used to say, the best time to sell is when you've got a buyer with money. An appraiser is not a buyer. On the other hand, it can sort of help the seller establish a landscape for the transaction. Well, the next step is a little bit more like finding people.
Finding people.
And there are two ways to find people. One way is to find people through a broker. Okay.
So if I'm selling a business, I go to a broker, or if I'm buying a business, do I go to a broker?
The answer is both.
Both.
Because the broker, although they represent the seller, they provide a valuable service for a buyer. One of the things that they do is they try to put together some type of package which will have a lot of the information that the buyer should need in order to evaluate a potential opportunity. They help the seller in that they're looking for buyers. And one of the roles of a broker is to create something of an auction, to create some demand for the business itself. Well, when you're meeting people, and you're just sort of talking and shaking hands. But really the next step in this marathon is to share secrets, is to sort of talk,
oh boy,
talk real turkey.
So is this where the buyer and seller sit down at a table, or are they doing this through their attorneys? Are they doing this through brokers? How does that happen?
At this point, most of the time, buyers and sellers are talking directly and will continue to do so throughout the process.
Got it.
However, because the seller is now starting to talk about some real confidential things, it's important to have a confidentiality agreement at this point. At this point, you know, you're sharing secrets. It's kind of like, you know, you kind of want to sort of be boyfriend, girlfriend, kind of, you know, just establishing a relationship. But in this instance, if there's a breakup at the very front end, this could be horribly detrimental to the seller's business if things don't work out. And therefore, a properly drafted confidentiality agreement is very important. The next step is the actual sharing of the information. And when you have a confidentiality agreement, one of the things that you, it talks about is what is confidential information. Arguably, when the seller gives the buyer information, it should somehow be marked or stamped confidential so that it's clear that the information is designed to be held in confidence. Now, after you start swapping some information, after you get to know each other a little bit, after these things go forward, the next step is often the letter of intent. Now, there's a split of opinion on letters of intent. I am not crazy about them, but there are others who insist on them. What a letter of intent is designed to do is to lay out the terms and conditions of the deal in broad terms. One of the reasons that it's used is to make sure everybody's on the same page.
Sure.
That the terms are going to be generally acceptable at such time as it's put into contract.
No misunderstanding.
Well, there are often misunderstandings in a letter of intent, which is sort of the flip side, and they're not enforceable of and by themselves. Having said that, what it really does is express intent. It sets the table so that people understand approximately where the deal is going. Well, after the letter of intent's been issued, and throughout this process, there is information being swapped, the next step is, of course, the contract.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the contract is the document that's maybe a little smaller than the West Des Moines phone book. For those listeners who don't know what a phone book is, that's a database with names, addresses, and phone numbers in it, normally arranged in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
But having said that, this contract is very, very important. And not only does it specify to a very extensive degree what's there, the contract will establish representations and warranties. The seller normally says, look, I promise you I own all these assets. I promise you that these are all of the liabilities. There's no taxes due. Nobody's trying to sue us, et cetera, et cetera. And what happens is if a deal goes bad, it's the contract that will come into play. Now, it'll come into play through representations and warranties, and that's a complicated subject for another opportunity. But the point is that the contract needs to be drafted, needs to be read, needs to be understood by the parties, by the lawyers for the parties. And if you have someone who's inexperienced in something like this, it is very possible to create a contract which doesn't actually protect you at the time you need the protection.
Mm.
So it's very important that this contract be properly drafted. Now,
and as that contract's drafted, Sam Creamer, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about buying and selling businesses. As that contract is drafted, Sam, can there be alterations back and forth? Is this also negotiation time?
This is where the final negotiations happen. This is where the give and take is. And this is where, again, counsel is of tremendous assistance. One of the things that is put in the contract is, of course, the purchase price.
Mm.
Now, the purchase price is the purchase price, except it's not. And what I mean by that is sometimes purchase price is allocated to assets, and sometimes purchase price is allocated to a non-compete agreement. Sometimes purchase price is allocated to a consulting agreement. So there are many ways to have the purchase price stated, and each way the purchase price is stated has a different tax ramification.
So in other words, what you're saying, rather than just a cash deal, you can juice this, for lack of a better term, one way or the other, if there are those additional agreements.
So normally those additional agreements are part of the ultimate transaction. And allocation is a very important issue in every transaction.
Got it.
Well, that contract is sort of like an engagement, right? I mean, you're agreeing that something's going to happen, something big, it's momentous, it's wonderful. The seller is, well, if not happy, at least as aggravated as the buyer. And the transaction's going to move forward, and that's the enforceable part of the contract. Closing is where the money
swaps. Before we get to closing, what happens, Sam, if this negotiation's been going on, as you say, a marathon for some time, and we get to the drafting of the contract, and one of the parties say, you know what? No, I'm not going to do this. Are there liabilities on either one of the parties at that time? Because there's been some money spent getting to this point.
Well, that gets into a question of what's normally called in merger transaction parlance, a breakup fee.
Oh.
Sometimes that's specified. If it's specified, it should stay in the letter of intent and follow through the contract. But most of the time, if there's a breakup prior to signing the contract, most of the time, both of the parties have spent money, approximately equal amounts of money. And normally, there is not a breakup fee.
Got
but
it.
To the extent the parties insist on one, that certainly is something that we have done in other contracts. When we're moving towards the closing is where the money changes hands, the title to the assets change hands, and that's really kind of like getting married. I mean, at that point, there's a unity of interest. Everybody, again, is reasonably happy.
You step on the glass and say, yay, let's go.
It's all good at that point.
Right.
Afterwards, there's, of course, things that can and do come up. For instance, if the seller has a consulting agreement, is the seller actually providing those consulting services? Are the assets exactly like were promised in the contract? Sometimes yes, sometimes not so much. So sometimes closing is kind of the end of the end. Sometimes it's the end of the beginning.
Mm.
And ultimately, there can be a divorce. There can be a situation where the parties are actively angry at each other because things either weren't as anticipated or weren't as specified or weren't as set out in the properly drafted
but
contract.
But this is now after the contract's been signed. All of this has happened, and perhaps the buyer goes in and says, well, wait a minute, this ain't quite going the way we said it was supposed to go. Then what?
Then you get lawyers involved again, and then it becomes very expensive and very, very, very time-consuming. And when you have post-closing problems, that was a lot of P's. If you have post-closing problems, those will invariably detract from the business operation. So it's always a question as to how far you want to push those types of issues. Now, at the very beginning of this presentation, I said it's really a marathon and not a sprint. When you go and you buy a car, you go and you buy groceries, you go and you buy a suit, you're buying it. Done. End of story. Again, this is a process. It's my finding after 37 years of practice that if a transaction closes in 90 to 120 days, it's closing fast, it's closing smooth, it's closing a little bit ahead of schedule. If it closes in 180 days, that's about right. If after 180 days the transaction hasn't closed, my experience, and it's only a experience-based opinion, is that it won't close, that there's something wrong in the transaction. If there's something wrong with the financing, well, that means there's something wrong with the deal. If there's something wrong with the deal, that means somebody has misevaluated something. I can tell you that 180 days in our practice has been sort of the drop-off point. If it doesn't close, the marathon's over. And there's no winner.
So is the deal. All right. Sam Creamer, ladies and gentlemen, the Creamer Law Firm. I guess you guys do some of this in your 30 years of business, yeah?
We've done projects as large as a $32 million forward triangular merger using ADRs that were publicly traded. And I've assisted a client in selling his business to his employees.
Very good.
So,
all across the board.
We're happy to work on big projects, but we're happy to work on any project that requires our attention that our clients deem to be important enough to involve us.
Got it. Sam Creamer from the Creamer Law Firm, ladies and gentlemen, a monthly visit. Are you growing or are you going? Steps in selling or buying a business. Sam, thanks for doing this. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
All right. We're going to have to step aside, find out what happened today on Wall Street. I can tell you that at one time today, the stock market was down 150 points or so and then came roaring back. What trade wars, said the investors? That's next on the Business News Hour.